The following podcast is for adults only. It is true stories of sex, kink, gender, or body image, and that means we need you to be a consenting adult. And you are, right? Okay, then let's go.
I am enormous. Get used to it. Everyone tells me I'm too much. Maybe it's just you're not enough for me. Can't you see? I'm the kind of woman I'm supposed to be.
Hi there, and welcome to the Body Storytelling Podcast. I'm sexual folklorist Dixie De La Tour, and this week we have a story from sex and dating advice columnist and author Anna Pulley. That whole the world opening up thing is happening right now, and that means we're transitioning from live streams to live shows. And maybe that's not accurate. Maybe we're not transitioning. Maybe we're moving to hybrid shows. Yeah, that feels right. We are going to be having our first outdoor, fully vaccinated body storytelling in San Francisco on Saturday, June 19th. And people are flying in from all over the country. We got people coming from Florida, from Texas, from New Orleans, from Seattle, from all these places, because the thing that was getting them through this pandemic was knowing that one day body would be back and they could have that live show experience. But if you can't fly in, or you're not vaccinated, we're going to live stream it too. So that means from the comfort of your home, you're going to be able to be right there with us. A totally different experience because it's a live show. So get your tickets as soon as possible. It's getting pretty close to sold out. The link to tickets is in the show notes. Get yours as soon as possible. And if you need to check in with me about hotels or anything like that, I've been helping a lot of people because I want people in person. I want you there. Get your tickets now. Are you single and searching for a dating app that actually encourages you to embrace your sexual side? Or are you in a couple that's looking to find a third? Then you need to check out Field. Field is the alternative dating app for couples and singles. Field has built a community for awesome, ethical, and honest people seeking to connect and explore their desires. The app was originally designed for people seeking threesomes, and it's the biggest dating app for threesomes today. You can actually date with your partner. Field values sex positivity and encourages you to share your desires and interests directly on your profile so that people know what you're into. Think about that. You're able to talk about what you're into. You can choose from a wide array of desires, from cuddling and kissing to BDSM and more. With radical open-mindedness designed right into the app, you can share about your sexuality, no matter how traditional or how kinky you may be. Nonconformity and shame-free individuality are what Field is all about. The app is inclusive to all, no matter your gender or orientation. When you join, you can choose to identify as over 20-plus genders and sexualities. The New York Times wrote that Field's options put the Kinsey scale to shame. And here's some great news. You can download the Field app for free and support the Body Storytelling Podcast by using the link in this episode's description. Just click the link in our show notes to get the Field app for free today. I'm having a lot of fun there, so I hope to see you on Field. It's time for a story. So let me tell you about this week's storyteller. Anna Pulley is the author of the lesbian sex haiku book with cats, which Tegan and Sarah said was an adorable and hilarious way to start the day, which Cheryl Strayed said was a must-read, and actress Jennifer Tilly said was thoroughly charming. She writes a weekly sex and dating advice column for the Chicago Tribune and has been published in New York Magazine, Mother Jones, The Washington Post, San Francisco Magazine, The Issue. She contributed to won a national magazine award, and also in Vice, Salon, BuzzFeed, and many others. She was also recently named a top LGBTQ writer on Medium. Her writing was quoted in Esther Perel's recent book, The State of Affairs, and she's been a repeat guest on Dan Savage's Savage Love podcast, on the Dear Prudence podcast, and most recently on the popular 99% Invisible podcast. This storyteller is Anna Pulley.
Thank you. That's fucking awesome. So when I was 17, I decided that I was going to finally lose my virginity. Thank you. It took about 4 more years, but that's another story. Just to give you a little idea of 17-year-old me, basically this, but covered in gingham. And always wearing a scrunchie that was purely decorative because I did not actually wear my hair up. So when I was 17, I was really good at losing just about everything. My car keys, my leftovers, my dignity. But losing my virginity proved to be an elusive battle that I struggled with for years. And part of the reason for that was because I had just been dumped by my high school boyfriend, James, whom I was still desperately in love with. And to give you an idea of how desperate, it took me 3 years to get over him, which is not too bad in the field of teen grief, except for the fact that we were only together for 6 months. Which is ridiculous even to me. So I thought James was super hot. He was wolfish, kind of vampiric before it was cool. Kind of scowly in like a Bronte novel kind of way. Except for the fact that when he kissed, it was sort of reminiscent of a snake having a seizure. That was his only fault. But I didn't, so my friends actually didn't agree with my assessment of his attractiveness. Go figure. They would later describe him as looking like the unfortunate love child of Mitt Romney and Beavis from Beavis and Butthead. I really wanted to show you guys a picture, but there's not a screen, so find me afterwards and I'll show you. But none of that mattered, of course. I thought he was super hot. And he played Jewel songs for me on the guitar. Thank God I'm not alone. And so, you know, I was like, this is it. Like, our love is forever binding and it's never gonna go away. Until 6 months later, it did. And he met a waitress at Coco's, which is where he worked, which is a chain restaurant in the mall, if you're not familiar. It caters to old people, mostly. So he met her, and he cheated on me with her, and dumped me, and then married her, like, 2 years later. Yeah, we're, like, you know, in high school. Crazy, he married her. And so I was, of course, devastated. And I lost my belief in the power that Jewel songs could save any relationship. Which was shattering. And so I was bereft. I spent the next month or so crying hysterically and writing a lot of feelings poetry in my journal, which I then turned into songs. Which was actually my probably one and only and greatest act of revenge. Because I played the song that I wrote about James at our high school talent show, where he was also performing. And I beat him. Do you guys want to hear a little bit of the song that I wrote? Okay. So, pretend I have a guitar and that I know three chords. It goes like this. It's called I Hope You're on Fire Somewhere. I find ways to blame you for every little thing. It's your fault that I stubbed my toe. It's your fault I can't sing. So that was the first month of our breakup. And then a friend, a very wise friend, and her wiseness was gleaned because she was the only one of our friend group who had smoked pot a couple of times. So she was like our Yoda. She told me, Anna, if you want to get over someone, you have to get under someone. This was revolutionary to me. I had never heard it. And I was like, yes, yes, I'm going to do just that. And so I shoved my feelings poetry aside, and I prepared for my new life, which I presumed would involve a lot of dicks. And on that front, I turned out to be very right. The first guy that I met was named Will, and he also worked at a restaurant. It was JB's, which is like a trashier version of Denny's, if you've never been. And Will was almost exactly like James. He looked like him. He kind of talked like him. The one place that they differed was that Will was a born-again Christian. And I was not super fond of religion, really. My parents taught me, you know, a smattering of hippie when I was growing up. And my Native American mother gave me her vague sense of spirituality, which basically involved putting sage on a lot of things, which I still do. And one time I went to Sunday school, just once, I was 7. And the Sunday school teacher yelled at me because she asked the students to draw God, what they thought God was like. And I drew my cat swimming in the ocean. Thank you. Thank you. Apparently that was wrong. I got yelled at as 7. It's terrible. But aside from that, I didn't have any real religion experience, and so Will's born-againness didn't really faze me yet. So we went on a date. We went to Denny's. We had coffee. And afterward, he invited me back to his apartment to look at his yearbook, which a smarter person probably would have seen right through that. But I was not a smart person, and I was turning over a new leaf, as you'll remember, a sluttier one. So I said yes. And also, I was the editor of my school's yearbook, so I had a little bit of interest in, in seeing all the yearbooks. So to his credit, we did look at yearbooks for like 10 minutes. And then that got boring, and he put away his yearbook, and sort of out of nowhere, he whipped out his Bible and started reading passages out loud to me. And he was like, this is so dope. Check this out. This is a passage from Corinthians. He says, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Doesn't that blow your mind? And I agreed that it did, even though it didn't really seem like something that needed to be spelled out, you know? Like, put that on a poster with a kitten. I'm sure you'll sell a million copies. So, whatever. He's reading that, but I didn't really have time to ponder it because the next thing he says to me is, I'm really turned on and I need to masturbate. Not, I would like to masturbate, or even I want to masturbate with you. I need to masturbate, he said. But I didn't, again, have time to think about it much, because before I could, he had whipped out his dick, pulled down his khakis, and started to furiously stroke his Bible-induced boner. And a very small part of me was like, you know, maybe you have a little bit to do with Will's sudden excitement. But even I knew that this was an erection for God. So he started jerking up, and I'm sitting there, and I realize, unfortunately, that my hands are clasped in front of me in an unintentional prayer-like position as he's doing this. And so, okay, so I'm 17. I didn't know shit about sex or agency, and part of the reason why I didn't stop him. I didn't know how to stop him. I thought we were gonna maybe kiss and like fondle a little bit, and like that didn't happen at all. We went straight to second base or something, whatever second base is. And as I was doing that, I was just like completely shocked. I didn't know what to do. And so I found myself sort of looking around his room and scrutinizing the walls. And I was like, why does every teenage boy have the same Scarface poster on their wall? Like, get a new poster. He's like, we don't care. But so he did that. He jerked off and he finished without ceremony and zipped up and then drove me home. And while I could sort of say that something vaguely sexual had happened to me, it wasn't something that I was going to be bragging about in the AOL chat rooms that I frequented. Nor was I anywhere closer to losing my virginity. We didn't even kiss the entire night. Yeah, fuck that guy. So, a few days pass. He's calling me. I'm not returning his calls. I thought about it, but I did not return his calls. So he comes to my work, which is Mervyn's in the mall, in the shoe department, and he gives me two CDs. One is Korn's self-titled album. And the second is the Eagles' greatest hits. And I have no idea what I did to deserve these particular gifts. But in my better mind, I'm thinking, okay, maybe this is his way of apologizing for what happened. But not even the liquid honey voice of Don Henley could make me unsee what I had seen and unfeel what I had felt. However, I was fairly sure that at least I had finally had a religious experience, kind of. Thank you so much.
Raised in the first pew, praises for Yeshua, case of a small town repression. Your body was baptized, so disenfranchised. I was your favorite confession. My past was checkered, your spotless record was probably in jeopardy. Your place and my place, His grace and your grace felt like the same thing to me. I never felt like I was sinning with you. Always felt like I could talk to God in the morning. I knew that I would end up with you. Always felt like I could talk to God in the morning. If it's so wrong, why did it feel so right? If it's so wrong, why did it never feel like sinning with you? Sinning with you. I fell closer to the stars with you. I felt forgiveness in my heart with you. Saw the light in the dark with you. Felt like I could fly. Take me down where the river is. Pull me under in your innocence. I wasn't in it for the hell of it. I guess that's why I never felt like I was sinning. Always felt like I could talk to God in the morning. I knew that I would end up with you. Always felt like I could talk to God in the morning. If it's so wrong, why did it feel so right? If it's so wrong, why did it never feel like sinning with you? I know what it feels like crossing the line, but I never felt shame, never felt sorry, never felt guilty touching your body. As long as you're for me, as long as I'm for you, who could be against us, baby? If it's so wrong, why did it so right? If it's so wrong, why'd it never feel like sinning with you? Sinning with you.
That was Sinning With You by Sam Hunt. And if you want to see Anna Pulley on stage at Bawdy telling that story, there's a link to the video in the show notes. I've been doing this thing for a long time. I've been doing live shows for almost 15 years. I've been doing a podcast for just about 5 years. And this is my entire livelihood, y'all. So the way that you can make sure I can continue to do this, despite that whole global pandemic thing that just happened, is to support me on Patreon. Patreon's paying my rent right now, and it means that I can afford to have a staff who can help me put out the podcast every week, who can make sure that live shows happen, and it would be pretty awesome to grow too. The way that I can do that is if you become a patron on Patreon. So go to patreon.com/bawdy. You know how to spell bawdy. Support me however you can, but we have really fun things to reward you with. Like, you know, custom butt plugs, ad-free podcast episodes, tickets to live shows, free tickets to the live stream, and more. So go to patreon.com/bawdy and thanks for your support. Well, that's our time together for this week. May I ask, if you liked this podcast episode, would you write us a review wherever you listen? Your kind words make a huge difference for us. I want to expose people to these stories. That's the way we change hearts and minds and help people be less judgmental, more empathetic. Thanks for doing that. And I also want to say thank you to the team that make this podcast possible. Thank you to Joe Moore, to Donal Mooney, to Mosa Maxwell-Smith, David Grossoff, and of course, podcast producer and live stream technical director, Marty Garcia. I'm sexual folklorist Dixie De La Tour. This has been episode 177 of the Bawdy Storytelling Podcast. See you next week, pervert.